Hello, everyone, and welcome back to James Cameron's Titanic Scene by Scene. I'm Brittany Butler.
I'm Ethan Allen Brem.
Oh, the full government name today.
It's my 90s name today.
And today we have another special guest with us. I mean, I guess I'll just introduce you right off the top. We have Adam Stolfo with us today, who is a fellow podcaster, movie lover, tons of things. You'll tell us all about you in a minute.
Yeah, it pretty much sums it up nicely, I think. Definitely. Yeah. How's it going, everyone? And hello, all loyal listeners and everybody. Nice to be here.
So great to have you.
Yeah, thanks for coming.
You are chatting with us from Australia. For Ethan and I, it's currently Monday night, but for you, it is Tuesday afternoon. So
next Tuesday, right? It's next Tuesday.
next week. Yes.
That's it. So. But I have to say right off the bat, Brittany and Ethan, that I've done a few guest spots on various pods before, right? But never, ever have I been as pumped and excited as I am for this one. And I'm not just saying that to butter you two up as well, all right? So
no pressure.
I'm being as genuine as I possibly can. Like, I have been listening to you guys since day one, right? And it's just been, I've been on this incredible journey on the Titanic with you guys since the beginning. And I think that you started the pod, was it 2017, 2018? Was it something like that?
April 2019.
Yeah. So, yeah, listening since day one. And so it's an interesting situation when you guest spot on someone else's pod, when you have been listening to them. And how many hours of content have you given me in my ears over that time as well? You know what I'm saying?
Like, yeah. I know. It's weird.
And I essentially found you guys by just doing a general search for Titanic-related material. And I was also quite a fan at the time of a lot of those minute-by-minute podcasts, you know, that look at a film in detail. But the reason that I became such a big fan of you guys is because of the fact that the scene-by-scene format is a little bit more digestible, I got to say. Because Titanic, if you did that minute-by-minute, you're over 180 minutes already. So that's 180 episodes, you know? And we're in the death throes of the ship right now. And what are you, 30-something episodes in? So, I've just been on this journey with you two. And it's interesting because I do feel like I know you both.
Nice, yeah.
That's what happens when you listen to someone for that many hours or a couple of people for that many hours, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like you mentioned, Brittany, I'm a creative at heart, you know? Like I've done filmmaking, so I've directed some of my own shorts and stuff like that. Podcasting is more of a recent venture. I did my own movie show, which is obviously how we got in touch originally, Brittany. Through Real Chat, and we did a Titanic episode when we were looking at the 100 greatest movies of all time. And Titanic, debatable where it was positioned, right, Brittany? 97 out of 100, that is probably way too low.
It gets me so frustrated. We've said it a million times, but it's like, how is this movie still somehow underrated?
Was this, what list was this? What list was this, AFI or something?
This was the 2017 Empire magazine.
Oh, the Empire one, okay. Got it.
Empire's a British magazine, so they had some British films in there, as you would expect, right? Like Shaun of the Dead. But Titanic was very low, Ethan. It was 97.
A nod to the year it came out, perhaps.
That's true, yeah. What was number one on that list?
It was something unoriginal, like The Godfather.
Oh, okay, I got it. Yeah.
It's always going to be up there. Shawshank Redemption was number two, yeah. You know, so. I had my own movies podcast called Real Chat, and we looked at Titanic. And once I understood and listening to you guys as well about the importance of this film and the love for this film, like around the world, when I brought my team on board, Brittany, I could feel your energy from a distance, like, you know, disagreeing with every point that they brought up. You're on team Adam, you know, yes. Because I was defending the film through the entire pod and stating it as like one of my favorite movies of all time. I'm a massive fan of director James Cameron. The Terminator and Aliens are two of my favorite movies of all time. Titanic's up there as well. But my number one film of all time, I do have to admit this, is actually a favorite of yours, Ethan, which is Back to the Future.
Yes. That's it.
But with Titanic, I've had a huge admiration for this film ever since I saw it in cinemas in 1997. This was This was just a phenomenal worldwide extravaganza, this film. And it also, I can remember this film in Australia being in the cinemas 12 months after its release. Mm-hmm. How often does that happen these days? If something lasts longer than a couple of weeks, it's like a success.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's straight to Disney Plus or Netflix or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah, and I saw this. I know Brittany will be like, geez, pleb. But, like, seriously, I saw this, like 8 times at the cinema, like in 97, 98.
Yeah. No, but that's saying something, yeah.
Yeah.
I've never repeated that in the 25-odd years since, so not that many times. And so it just made a lasting impression on me, and I copped a lot for it from friends. I was 17 at the time, and I've copped a lot over the years for that, about how could you go see that in the cinema like 8 times? And it's like, because it was a movie made for the theatrical experience.
Yeah, I was going to ask, what exactly was it about it that brought you back 8 times? Because I think in our last episode, I had said that for me, you know, getting to because I never got to see it in theaters in the 90s. So seeing like the 2012 re-release and the just 25th anniversary one this year, it's that feeling of like you want to keep re-experiencing it. You know what I mean? It's like you want to keep getting that feeling back from the first time you watched it. And then you want to take other people with you to experience it too. And I just wonder if that's just pretty much the blanket statement of how everybody kind of seems to feel about this movie, like the magic of this movie.
I was 17, 18 years old as well, Brittany, so I'm pretty sure there were a couple of dates associated with this film as well, because it was the ultimate date movie as well. So nothing but fond memories, guys, like as in it's just one of the defining movies of my life, and movies in general, like, shaped who I am today, and, you know, like, it doesn't diminish. It's just part of who I am. Movies like Titanic and some of the other favorites that I mentioned as well have all contributed to who I am as a person, you know? So, and that is why you find yourself searching for material online, like podcasts, looking for like-minded people who share the enthusiasm and the joy and the nostalgia for films such as this one.
Yep, and that's how I found your podcast episode, probably, around late 2018 into 2019, maybe, because I think your episode's from 2017.
I think it is.
Yep, so upon re-listening, though, as we just reached out recently now for this upcoming scene, going back to your episode and listening to, like, the first 20 minutes or so, I was like, oh, yeah, I definitely remember this episode, and listening to it in the car and remembering how I was feeling about what the people on your panel were saying and how every few lines would be like a pang to the chest. And it was one of those many podcast episodes on Titanic that I had listened to that inspired me to make this podcast. So that's why it's just kind of funny.
That is absolutely hilarious. And that makes my heart skip a beat as well, because because I can just imagine the response from someone who has so much love and admiration for this film to hear people talk back against it. I mean, I'm sure, despite all the positivity that you guys have had around this show and that, surely some people have made contact with you who aren't fans, and have voiced that they feel the need to really voice that opinion.
People I know personally have told me I've gotten arguments with people about I mean, because I've always loved the movie, and we're rewatching it again, you know, you notice things that you didn't notice the first time. I haven't seen it even 8 times. So I'm able to notice things along the way. So,
but that's one of the great things about your podcast as well, you two, because of the fact that, you know, Brittany is the, you know, you're the information queen, you know, like, you know, so much about this film. You've absorbed so much of it, like, you know, over so many years now, and your love just like pours out of you for it. But with yourself, Ethan, like, you know, you've seen it enough to know the film, but the insights that you bring as someone who hasn't seen it as much, it's a really good dynamic. It works like really, it's perfect, you know, if you were both if you were both on a similar level and you were just throwing that stuff at each other, it wouldn't have the same dynamic, I feel.
I think you're right. Yeah, definitely. And even there's been times when I've been like tempted to keep going. When I'm rewatching scenes and I'm like, no, I want to like save it for my initial thoughts for the next one. So yeah, I've definitely resisted.
But I follow you guys on Letterboxd as well. And Ethan, you wouldn't have any time based on how many films that you've watched. you wouldn't have any time for rewatches of Titanic.
I don't rewatch a lot of movies. I really don't rewatch a lot of movies. I rewatched Back to the Future. I've seen Back to the Future probably more than anything except for Toy Story. And that's just because my kids love Toy Story. But yeah, aside from children's movies that they watch, yeah. But yeah, I do watch a lot of movies. I don't watch a lot of movies like more than once, just because I don't know. I love like preserving the initial thought of a movie and the feeling of watching it, like the visceral experience and just my thoughts on it. And, you know, sometimes there's movies that are a lot deeper and you kind of need a second watch. But aside from that, I try not to, or if I do rewatch a movie, I like to space it out like a few years. But yeah.
Just before we go on, Brittany, did you, on my another episode of my podcast, James Cameron actually came to Australia, I think it was 2019, and myself and my partner went up to Sydney to see him at a talk. And I actually got to ask him a question that night. I was the last person in the line as well. It was like, we're running out of time. We got time for one more. And there was little me standing there by the mic. So I've actually been able to speak to the man once.
What did you ask?
I actually asked him a very, very personal question. It wasn't like, you know, a fanboy question about one of his films or anything like that. I actually just asked him a question about, like, you know, ultimately about, like, how somebody like him is able to have the sort of success that he's been able to have. He has to live by a couple of very, very important, just very, very important life lessons. Like, you know, not being afraid, like as in what's the worst that could happen type of scenario. Do you know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. Because a lot of us are very crippled by fears in this life. And in order to achieve the type of things that James Cameron has, you've got to be able to push all of that aside. And that was that actually came to me in the moment because I was convinced that I was not going to get a chance to, you know, I was just going to run out of time, you know, it's not going to happen. And then I was lucky enough to be standing up there next to the mic. It's like, we've got time for one more. And yeah, I said to him, I said, like, you know, this is one of the things that you've said in one of your talks. Are there any advice that you can give to people who might occasionally feel a little bit more crippled by things like fear or things like blockages that get in their way and stuff like that? And he gave a really, you know, insightful response about you've got to learn to compartmentalize that and push it aside. And what's the worst that could happen? Like you fall over and everyone has a good laugh at you. Like, you know, what's so wrong about that? Type of thing, you know what I mean? So it was just one of the great moments of my life, just being able to speak to one of my idols.
That's awesome, man. That's really cool.
Amazing. So this scene, Death of Titanic Part 1, scene 35. Now this first part, we're having you come on for this scene because you said that like this little moment in particular is like one of your favorite parts of the movie.
Look, it's one of the greatest shots in the film is in this little section as well, guys. So that's the propeller guy.
Yeah, we're gonna get into that.
Of course we are. It was a big deal, this shot. And like, I'm looking forward to getting into that with you guys. But no, look, Titanic's a very, very difficult film to pinpoint favorite scenes. You know, like there are so many of them. And a lot of my favorite scenes in this film are from the first half. Because, you know, it's often been described as a film with two halves. You know, you've got like, you know, the love story and the build up first half, and then disaster film and the sinking in the second half. But the ship's final plunge, so I guess it started in maybe the few scenes that you guys have just looked at recently. It's essentially at the end of the Nearer My God to Thee sequence, mm-hmm. when that, you know, that song is underscoring all, so much emotion. Like, that is such an amazing sequence. But then after the Captain Smith is, you know, you see his, you know, essential demise. James Horner's score kicks back in.
Yep.
The drama and the action ramps up and it gets very, very serious. And it's not to say that what we haven't been watching up to that point is very serious, but the music is essentially telling you about that this is like, you know, this is now life and death for these people. This is, there's no more, they're running out of time. You know what I mean? So the final plunge of the ship is all the way up until, like, you know, you're obviously not quite there yet, but when the ship, you know, goes under and you see that wonderful shot which is coming up with the ship coming down, and you just see the last thing that before it goes under is the word Titanic, you know, on the, you know, that's a fantastic visual effects shot, that one. Yeah. I don't know if I've really answered your question, Brittany, but so many great scenes in this film. It's like ongoing, you know, yes. But the final plunge and the way that James Horner's score ramps up for this scene is it just really sticks in my mind. I really feel the impact and the power of what's going on here.
Yeah.
That is so true, though. I remember I saw, like, around the 25th anniversary release when everyone was kind of hyping up Titanic on Twitter, like, especially film Twitter. Like, people were coming around to it more after seeing it theatrically. And someone said, it's kind of insane how James Cameron has one of the best shots ever every other scene in Titanic. Like,
that's it.
It's amazing.
And they used, like, a gif of the actual final plunge where it, like, does that, you know, the ship is kind of stationary, but the camera's making it look like it's going down, you know? Mm-hmm. And it transitions to Jack and Rose from above, yeah.
But James Horner's score, a massive part of this movie. Mm-hmm. You guys have brought it up numerous times, and you use it as underscore on your podcast as well, which I always enjoy. Brittany, what do you think of that that file that I sent you, which was the edited version of this very scene?
Yeah, I think the way I've been getting the tracks for, like, the beginning of the podcast music and the end of the podcast music for each scene, you know, it has been the edited versions. Like, they're on YouTube. I don't know if these are the actually official edited ones or, like, someone just did a recreation of how they are in the film.
I'm pretty sure they're all recreations.
But yeah, I'm familiar, obviously, with the way the score is chopped up in the movie, but yeah.
It's a real hodgepodge. I don't know if you guys have heard that.
Oh, yeah.
It's in the film compared to the soundtrack releases. The mm-hmm. music is exceptionally different.
Super chopped up, yeah.
Hmm. James Cameron's quite famous for that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it works.
It does.
Yes. So at the top of the scene, we mentioned this first shot at the end of our last episode, but I'll mention it again because there's something else I want to say about it. So it starts with the very eerie, disturbing shot of a dead woman floating underwater with the first class lounge light fixture behind her. And I wanted to point out that this is the third time that we're returning to this shot of the first class lounge light fixture. So we first see it in the scene where Rose makes the decision to meet Jack at the bow when she looks over and sees the little girl. That scene starts hanging on that light and then it comes down. And then we see it again after the ship has already hit the iceberg and no one is really sure of the severity of the situation yet, and the band is just playing in the first class lounge and Thomas Andrews is walking around like, what is going on? That scene starts with a shot of that light as well and comes down. And now here we are again at the light. Obviously, it's completely different now. It's a total nightmare. It, that music that hits right when it comes, right? Oh, it complements the shot so well.
Am I right in saying as well, Brittany, that that room was one of the few rooms that wasn't actually built in the sets? Like, they,
yes.
It was, yep, a miniature. Is that right?
A very small miniature, yeah. Mm. And that's why those two scenes, like that tea scene with Rose and her mom and everything, and then the scene with Mr. Andrews, it always looks a little bit off because it was green screened in. And so this scene is also a green screen shot, but in this case the fogginess of the water really kind of helps. I think it looks perfect, really. I think it looks really good,
and shows that the lights are still burning at this stage as well, even underwater.
Yes
Yeah.
I know. And in my notes, when I just said, like, then versus now, like, with now it being a nightmare, the woman being in a nightgown just kind of adds to that, I feel like. Because she is in a nightgown, I think, right? I always thought.
Looks like it, yeah.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So,
and you always, like, wonder, like, how does she end up there? Like, you know, I mean, I've seen people say that, like, maybe this isn't exactly realistic, but it's a interesting shot to put in there.
Well, obviously a number of people drowned.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you know, so much talk about most of the victims freezing to death, but, you know, surely some people, you know,
got caught in there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It is a beautiful shot though.
It really is. The way so many shots in this movie just stand out. This is maybe only, what, 4 or 5 seconds that it hangs on it, but paired with that score and the way it just cuts right to it after Father Biles says the former world has passed away, and then we see that shot. So many of the decisions made in this movie are just like almost formulated to stick in your mind.
Yeah, and it's almost a deliberate too, because she does like the nightgown thing. She does look like she's wearing a nightgown, and mm-hmm. maybe, you know, she looks like she's sleeping, and you know, you're mm-hmm. entering into a more nightmarish aspect of the sinking with, you know, all of a sudden you're seeing people falling, the guy off the propeller, and yeah, just kind of transitioning. Everything that James Cameron does is super deliberate, and so the transition from that to this woman sleeping, and it kind of puts you into this like nightmarish state of what's to come.
What is interesting about that shot though is that she appears to be alone as well. There's no yes. other floating bodies yeah. around her or anything, and that room exactly. would be pretty big as well. So mm-hmm. it is an interesting choice from Cameron to, mm-hmm. to put it in there, considering that she doesn't appear to be a character that we've seen, does she?
No. But sometimes those are the best characters to use for scenes like this, you know, because you can project.
Yep.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love how in my notes I just said like, oh my god, I have to do so much scene selection skipping now. This is crazy, because like when I put the DVD in and I start it from the top and then I go forward to whatever scene we're at, I'm like doing so much skipping. I'm like, oh my gosh, like we're really like all the way at the end of disc two. Oh man. But yeah, I still just can't get over it. But yeah, so then we get the shots of the plates falling off the shelves. And in my notes I said that at least I am always reminded of Old Rose's opening remarks about the china, how it had never been used.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's obviously, I think, was the intention here. You know, here you see it, all the plates crashing into a million pieces. Most of the plates probably weren't used yet. I feel like that's probably the intention behind this shot, as well as, you know, just more of, you know, destruction of beauty and all that stuff.
It's in slow motion, which is actually an interesting juxtaposition with the shot before that we were just talking about with the woman. Like, is it like, because that's a very like eerie, slow moving shot as well with not much motion. And then it cuts to more slow, something else that's quite slow, mm-hmm. you know, it's like they're really mm-hmm. emphasizing it with the speed.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because when everything hits water, it slows down too. So it's, right. there's that, you know, subliminally maybe.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So I had just written, you know, I said Titanic is dying before she really got a chance to live. They'd never really been used, and now they'll never be used.
It's the first shot, which is really emphasizing. I mean, like, at the end of the previous scene, we did see that some people, it's starting to tilt to the angle where some people are needing to hold on tighter than before in order to keep themselves steady. Yeah. This is the first shot that's sort of saying that, like, it's getting to a particular angle in which, like, anything that's upright is not going to be upright much longer, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
So then we cut to a shot outside of the ship, obviously out on the ocean, of one of the lifeboats. I tried to find out what lifeboat this was and which officer this was, but didn't say it anywhere. But he says, I think, bloody pull faster and pull. And they're trying to row away from the ship out of fear of the suction. Apparently, you know, they thought that it would suck the lifeboats right down. In my notes, I said that this shot of the ship, the propeller shot to the lifeboat with the ship in the background, back to the ship rising, propeller shot, it always looked off to me. And like something about the way the ship looks here just does not look real at all.
It's actually, I think it's probably one of the worst looking shots in the movie.
Yes, yes. Like, no offense.
No, absolutely.
It's not great.
In a film that has so many standout visual effects, particularly after 25 years of looking back at this stuff as well. Like, you know, that's what they say is one of the things that's aging Titanic is its digital effects. But this is not one of the best. It's the juxtaposition of the lifeboat with the effect shot in the background of the ship. Like, you know, there's so much of the ship in that shot, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not even just that. It's just the way the ship actually looks. Like, I don't think it was a model necessarily. I think maybe, I don't know, to me it almost looks like the ship is completely CG in those two or three shots. I don't know. And then when I was listening to the James Cameron commentary, at this moment, he said, these are hideously complicated digital shots. And I said, I can tell.
at a time like this in the film as well, like, you know, and with what's about to come as well. So it's but yeah, it's not great by 2023 standards.
And also just like by Titanic standards. Compared to some of the other scenes in the movie, that's why it stands out to me. It's like, yeah, that one's not quite working. But
well, I can't remember if I thought that back then.
No, probably not.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, because I mean, there are shots literally in my notes later here that I'm like, this still looks incredible. I love this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know what it is about that one. We see the poop deck continuing to rise. Passengers start to really begin falling down the deck, and they're screaming, and the score is building this sense of dread. And in this moment, in between cutting to, you know, all these, this chaos that's really ramping up and everybody falling, they do a close up on Jack for like 2 seconds. And this is like the most panicked we ever really see him, I would say. And it's so brief, but it's so important to me because it just is a little moment that shows that he's not totally perfect. Like we went over this in the last scene a little bit too, because people criticize him for that. They're like, oh, he's so perfect. He has no flaws. He's totally prepared. He knows exactly what to do. Like, this is so ridiculous. And I'm like, okay, but like this little 2 second shot of him, it just gives you this little glimpse of a little extra vulnerability. He looks very young. He looks very scared because he is. And I feel like in this moment, I said, you know, he's really doubting whether or not they're actually going to make it for maybe the first time.
Mm. It definitely humanizes him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ethan, you'd agree, mate. He's just being a guy as well. Like, all these other scenes they're talking about, he's just being a guy. Like, he's displaying that he's got it all under control, you know, like.
Yeah.
This is a thing here in my country, all right? Is Aussie male culture, all right? About the fact that, like, you know, like, showing weakness is not a good thing. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like I said, you've got to have it under control.
As long as you're exhibiting the illusion that you have it under control, that's what matters, right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's what makes this shot so important. You're right, Brittany, about the fact that you're actually humanizing Jack with shots like this, because he is very much a, like, you know, a mortal, like, you know, person. He's trying to have it all under control. And it does seem at times that it's quite convenient that he knows exactly what to do, you know, in all key moments of this film. Yeah. But like that's what makes this shot so great. I agree with you 100%.
And he's doing that heavy breathing a little bit. You know, you can hear that. They do the sound editing in there. He's not completely prepared, you know, you can see it in his eyes. And, you know, he doesn't know what's going to happen here as he's watching all of this catastrophe unfold.
Getting very serious at this point, and the screams elevate at this point as well, as because people start to fall. And so it's a perfect time to have this shot of him, definitely.
Mm. I know, and it's so quick, but it hits me every time.
Yeah. Yes.
Yes, so we see the people sliding down the decks and everything, and behind the scenes, little tidbit that I'm sure a lot of fans of the movie know, but if you don't, a lot of these people have wheels on the bottom of their life belts or life jackets to help make them go faster. Some of them were being pulled by cables as well because they couldn't really tilt this part of the set. So they're doing a lot of the Dutch angles with the camera again, and then just having these people just wheeling down.
Tell me the stunt guys don't look like they're having a ball though. Like, at least it looks quite fun. Like, you know, like, take yourself out of the real moment on the real Titanic for a minute.
I know. And in my notes, I said that this whole scene and sequence and the idea of, you know, sliding down the ship, is probably what inspired the incredibly poor taste Titanic blow up slide.
No, my kids were at a blow up like thing park, and there were like 20 different blow up things in that. They had the Titanic one there.
Awful. So like, who, like, but the way you said, like, oh, it looks kind of fun, I'm like, that's what I think someone thought, and they said, let's turn it into a blow up slide. That's amazing. But I do have, like, as terrible as that is looking back, obviously, I have a core childhood memory of showing up to this really big block party at the square of, you know, the town that my grandmother lived in. And we arrived to the block party and they had a Titanic blow up slide. And it was huge when I was like, you know, I don't know how old I might have been. Obviously, it was after the movie. So this was maybe like 99, 2000, something like that. And they had it. And I just remember, like, walking over to the block party and being underneath it. So like I was like underneath the angle of it and I was like coming up to it that way and it says Titanic on the back. And as a kid, I was just so excited. I was like, oh my God, Titanic! I was like in my element. I was like, oh, this is great. I definitely probably went on it as well. And looking back, I'm like, wow, that was kind of messed up. Not really great. Goodness, yes. So we get more shots of the dishes breaking, so they return to that, except now it's not in slow motion, it's actual motion. Yeah, so shortly after we just saw it, yeah. They really want to drive that home.
Those plates, I swear.
Yeah. And then shots of furniture sliding around in a first-class cabin. And then right after that, we get a shot of Trudy, Rose's maid, hanging on to someone. And they make sure the guy says, hang on, Miss Trudy, so that we know.
There's a question. Who is that? Like, no, not Trudy.
Yeah, yeah. Who's holding her? Yeah.
Like, because he just says, hold on, Miss Trudy, or something like that. Is that someone of note or is it ADR? Like, you know, someone off, like someone just recording that while there's an extra there, like holding her or whatever.
Good question.
Yeah. I don't know. It doesn't say... It doesn't mention who it is. It just says, passengers lose their grip. They slide down the wooden deck. Trudy Bolt, Rose's maid, slips as she struggles along the railing and slides away screaming. So it was originally written differently than how it ended up.
It's just like random first class male passenger or something like that. Like,
Or like maybe it's another crew member or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows her name, right? Yeah.
You wouldn't call her Miss Trudy during the sinking of the Titanic, like, you know, if you don't know who she is.
Exactly, yeah. Good point.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was like someone, because if you did really know who she was, you would probably just say, hang on. So.
It's probably like an acquaintance, maybe, more. So, yeah.
Poor Trudy. But, poor Trudy, screaming and falling down the deck.
I know. This is obviously her very much implied death scene. And that's it. Like, that's the last we see of her, just going down the deck. And I wrote how I actually really love when they cut from that out into this, like, another wide shot of the sinking. You can still hear her screaming for help when they cut to the wide shot. They hold over that scream, and you can still hear it.
It's called, when you hold over the audio, it's called, like, it's either a J cut or an L cut. One of them is when you hold over the audio, and the other one is when you bring in the audio early. I always get those confused.
That's a very good question. Yeah, I've heard that as well, obviously.
Yeah. I'm not, I don't.
It's, I don't know which one it is. Yeah. But, yeah, they've carried the sound across. Did they drop the volume of her?
Yes, just a little bit. Not too much, though. Like, hers, you can kind of hear her above everyone else still, yeah. I love when they do the wide shots because they do kind of muffle all of the screaming a little bit and they make it sound further away, which just like really just kind of puts you there.
Yeah, it definitely brings a realism to it for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's a really interesting decision here in the score as well. Like they actually, with Trudy's fall, right, into this wide shot.
It's the love theme, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I put this in my notes here as well, like about the fact that the love theme is played here for the next, half a minute or so, but it's a dramatic variation on it, isn't it? Like for, you know, obviously to emphasize what's going on. But why do they use the famous love theme in this part, do you think, Brittany? Like I've always wanted to, like, you know, bounce that off someone who would know, like, or who would have thought about it. Because this sequence where they're playing it has very little to do with Jack and Rose. So is the theme being tied in to the Titanic in this moment?
Like love, like a Titanic love?
So why at this point is it being played?
Yeah, honestly, I never really thought about it before. It wasn't until you mentioned the score and I thought about the scene that I was like, oh, it's the love theme. Yeah, I can hear it. Like as she lets go. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's just interesting. It works. I'm not saying it doesn't work. You feel what they're going for.
Yeah.
I was thinking, well, maybe it's because everything that we're seeing happen right now is ultimately going to tear Jack and Rose apart.
Mm-hmm.
This is what will be their ending, you know, so.
When you guys get to a scene coming up shortly when the stern starts to rise up at the full 90 degrees or whatever it is, mm-hmm. and, you know, Jack pulls Rose from one side of the railing onto the other. I know you're not quite there yet. They do another variation.
We have to move.
Exactly the bit I mean, but like that's also, yeah. but that's on them. So it makes a huge amount of sense. This one is a little bit more curious.
Hmm. Yeah. It's all connected. I like that though.
Does it carry over to when we see Rose's mom?
It just, that's when it kind of fades out and then it changes to that.
Okay. Yeah.
I love that yeah. part.
This is where the movie becomes a horror film for a brief little.
Yeah.
And people start jumping from the deck at this point as well. So yeah. we start to really get a real sense of the size and also the height at which the ship is.
Oh, yeah.
Hit at this point as well. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like it's taking people a number of seconds to hit the water.
I was going
to
say that too.
This must have been just absolutely horrifying in real life. Like I've thought numerous times over, looking into, I mean, this film essentially got me interested in the historical event of the sinking of the Titanic. So I've got numerous books and documentaries and, I'm fascinated by the sinking of the Titanic. And as good as the movie is at recapturing what must have been an absolutely horrific situation, there are just certain moments, like in this scene here, where you just need that reminder about this ship is gigantic. It's sinking in front of you and it's sticking out of the water and people are literally leaping to their, you know, to their untimely death from the railings because they don't know what else to do. They don't know where else to go. I mean, some people made that choice while other people seem like they lose their grip and fall. You know what I mean? So to actually witness this, because the lights were still on at this point for a little bit longer as well. So people could see it. Mm. And obviously the film's lit a lot better than it would have been in real life watching this with our eyes. You know, even with the ship's lights going, the movie's lit up a lot more than it would have been in real life because it has to be.
When people call that a flaw, it gets on my nerves. Yeah, it's like, yeah. this is unrealistic. It would have been much darker. Like, it was a moonless night, like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, okay, it's also a movie, you know, because then when we have bad lighting, you know, all these TV shows these days, all anyone does is complain about how I can't see anything. So I'm just like, you know what I mean? Don't, please.
You can't win. Yeah. It's like, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
So... Does anyone have a time on the guys, on the one guy's fall where they show him from the top to the bottom?
Oh, at least, yeah, at least a couple, maybe like 4 seconds or something.
Because you fall, I think you fall about 64 feet, or which would be like 19 meters or 19 and a half meters in 2 seconds. So I was trying to think of like what that height would be.
It's at least double that in the film when they show that there's one guy who makes the choice just to leap off and they show him fall
all the way.
The whole way, right? Yeah, I was trying to think of like how many seconds that would be. I was going to convert it to feet or meters. Or
as you say that, there was on the historical commentary, Don Lynch said that a passenger who did jump, not necessarily from that height, because I don't know if you would survive that, but a passenger who did jump said that it felt like it took forever to hit the bottom. So nice. Once I heard that, I felt like this scene might be like a representation of that, because you just, it does feel like he's just, it's so long.
Yeah.
And and this is where we see the baker of the ship is again, isn't it?
Yep.
No, he's about to jump.
Is that what you think? You think that he's like debating and then he doesn't?
I think he's about to jump and he sees the propeller guy who I'm sure we're going to speak about shortly. And then he then decides, nope, not going to do that. And then he takes another drink.
That's what I thought as well. Yeah.
Huh. For some reason, I never thought that. I thought he was just climbing over to the other side and happened to see this guy fall and then was like, oh, I don't know. But that's interesting. Yeah.
I don't know, Ethan, I read it like, you know, the way it's cut together as well is almost like showing that he's thinking of doing the same thing.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Trying to numb himself from the pain a little bit is how I saw it with the alcohol.
Like, I know you've spoken about it on your show, but I can't believe that he survived the sinking.
I know. In the water that whole time because of the alcohol in his blood, like crazy.
Yeah. And he was absolutely off his face. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It happens.
I did say that I think the shot of the man falling, which is obviously a CGI man, into the water. I said that still looks pretty good.
I thought it looked really, I thought so. Yeah, for, I mean, even regardless of 1997 or not, I thought it looked pretty good.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, like, the people in the foreground, you can, like, in the bobbing in the water, you can kind of tell that they're green screened in.
Yeah, that part, yeah.
And I said, but Cameron doesn't hang on it for too long, so that's good. I feel like he's really smart about that. Mm-hmm. He doesn't hang on it long enough for you to be able to poke at it and be like, ah! You know, it's he hits the water, you're there for like 1.5 seconds and then you're on to something else. So.
One thing we didn't touch upon in the lead up to this part as well is that this is the point, like, you know, obviously we've seen the plates fall off and the things within the ship start to, you know, move and you know, be thrown around at this point. In the wide shot that you were talking about, Brittany, where it pans across from, like, you know, the front to the back as well, you can hear in the sound design everything in the ship starts to crash and starts to move forward, right? Mm-hmm. Now, this is something that eyewitnesses in the lifeboat said they heard, and they said that this sound, I mean, it's a movie where, God, in movies, we're so used to explosions and crashes and thumps that, like, you know, it's just part of the movie watching experience, right? But in real life, when this happened, apparently the sound of this within the Titanic,
it was very loud.
Yeah. But also horrific. Not something that you can describe to somebody. Mm-hmm. The sound of everything that's not tied down to something in the ship starts to move at the same time and crashes into something else. And that people couldn't describe, you know, in the inquests and stuff about what this actually sounded like. They're just like, it's a horrible sound. Like, as in, it's a terrifying sound in the middle of the ocean.
And then mixed in with that here in the movie, you hear all the metal creaking still as well. They have that mixed in. And
I love that.
Yeah, I love when the score cuts out. And it's going to happen more in a little bit, I think, after this scene. But because that's what you would hear in real life. You don't hear, you know, you think of in horror movies, especially, you know, you have someone hiding and then you hear the score over it. And it's like, okay, they would obviously hear that person in the, you know, under the bed or something. But like, if you take the music out of it, it doesn't make sense. But in this movie, a few times here, they cut out the score entirely and you hear the creaking or the screams. And yeah, it just puts you in it.
Yeah. There's some scenes in which it's really scary. And so scenes that you've already looked at as well, like, you know, with Rose looking for Jack in the the lower decks and stuff like that. Like, you know, when the lights are flickering on and off. And you listen to this in the cinema, you just, you know, unless you've got a real high-end home theater set up at home, you can't get the same experience as you can with that amazing sound in the cinema.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, so good. So Baker, Charles Jugan, he had climbed over the railing, possibly was considering jumping himself before he sees the infamous propeller guy, who we have not fully talked about yet here.
Infamous propeller guy?
Infamous propeller guy. If you just Google, like, Titanic propeller guy, like, it's a whole thing.
That was my rapper name.
Propeller guy.
The infamous propeller guy. Like the Notorious B.I.G.
Exactly, I was just going to say that.
Infamous propeller guy.
The propeller guy did make the choice to jump, right? Like he's not like losing grip or something, is he? Like they don't really specify.
Yeah, I feel like, wait, let me see.
Because if he made the choice, this was a terrible decision from this character.
Yeah.
To jump off the bat.
Right there, yeah.
You don't actually see him make the decision, he's just falling, so we don't really know.
Yeah, well, just a terrible decision from the guy, like, even in the throes of panic, to jump off the back of the ship this way with the propellers in midair like that, you know, like, oof. It's just, and when you guys saw this in the theater as well, did you get the collective audience, ooh, like that, when that's what happened in every screening that I went to here in Australia, was everyone reacted to the propeller guy, like, you know, with an ooh, feeling his pain.
With the sound design and everything. So he's falling, he's screaming, he hits the propeller with a hard thud, and then his screaming abruptly stops as he just spins into the water. Yeah, all the way down to the rest of the way. So I said I'm so torn on this moment, just because, at least in recent years, maybe, I don't know, people laugh at this. They think it's funny. They think it's like, it's memed. That's what I'm saying with like the infamous propeller guy. Like people in the comments, you know, about anything regarding Titanic, sometimes they'll say, yeah, my favorite part was when that guy hit the propeller. Like, you know what I mean? It's just like, and they're like joking about it. Definitely a couple times that I've seen it in theaters, people laugh at that moment.
Yeah.
And obviously it's horrific. It's not funny. But yeah, I don't think that was the intention. So
I think it's just like along the lines of, you know, some people kind of have like a dark sensibility about it. You know, you are watching a movie. I think there's when you're watching a quote unquote fictionalized account of a real event, I think it brings you kind of out of the truth about it. Like it's not a documentary, mm-hmm. right? So you see something happening and using special effects to create this effect, and you know he's spinning off of it. Like there are people who like have like a dark sense of humor who, you know, maybe will kind of chuckle at that. But I think it's just, you know, the reality of watching something that's been fictionalized.
Yeah. I think Cameron's trying to emphasize the horror and importance of these key moments, to be mm-hmm. honest. I think it's like, you know, like look what could happen if you decided to jump or fall at this particular point and mm-hmm. you felt this way. Look what could happen.
Yeah. And just the exactly. chaos, you know.
Yeah.
That like all of the stuff that's happening is very imperfect. Like everything is just insane.
Yeah.
It's a good point of view shot as well from someone who was up there on that railing as well.
Right.
I mean, I assume it could be a point of view from the baker.
From the baker, yeah, because we just see him look at it and then we kind of see exactly what he's looking at, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He goes, nope, another swig.
Yep. Yeah. So, yeah, I guess I said just because of the way some people take it and when you're watching everything as one whole movie, obviously in sequence, and this happens, obviously I can't picture the movie without it. So my notes are just kind of pointless when I just say like, maybe it might be a little superfluous just because there's already so much of people falling. And especially like after this, like people falling on top of each other, people hitting all these things as they go down. And so I don't know, to just also have this in there, it's just kind of like, I don't know, maybe just a slight step too far. I don't know. When I saw it in theaters a few times, obviously there were people who laughed, and then other times it hit the way it was supposed to hit, like that moment. Ooh, like you got the or it was silent, yeah. You know. So
does he talk about it in the commentary at all?
No, he just says that it's like a CG guy. Hmm. Obviously. Yeah. But what's funny is that the historians said that they often will be asked, because they worked, you know, on the film.
Yeah.
And Don Lynch, he said, yeah, I've had people ask me if that guy actually got hurt.
Not whether he lived or died, but if he got hurt.
He got hurt, yeah.
Like, yeah.
Oh, man. I said, but whether or not it's a little superfluous, you know, whatever, but I said, you can't say that it's not memorable.
Yeah, I don't think it's treated from a filmmaking standpoint as comedic at all, but
No.
It is an interesting point to bring up about that it is, you know, regarded as a humorous scene by so many.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's a shame when you're in this scene and you're really trying to emphasize about the importance and like the horror of the moment.
Yeah. And people laugh, and then it like takes you out of the moment for like 5-10 seconds, and then we recenter and then we're back in it, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so the baker takes another swig of his flask. Again, this is all historical. As we said, he was really drinking. And then we cut back to Jack and Rose, who are hanging on to the railing right now. They haven't gone over yet. And Jack is telling her, hang on real tight. And he tries to help secure her and like whatever. And he puts his arm around to just hold them tighter. And I just wrote in my notes that, you know, you can see that he still has those handcuffs on, which is just so sad to me.
Yeah. See, from a filmmaking perspective, I'm like, you know, you're like, yeah, kudos to the continuity.
Continuity, yes.
Because, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing that could really be overlooked in certain shots in particular, mm-hmm. you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because all these shots, so many of them would have been filmed at different points of the production schedule as well.
Yeah. So they must have had after that specific part, you know, taking the Polaroids of Jack's costume and, or writing down what it is. Like, okay, so after this, he has to have the two handcuff bracelets, basically, as part of his costume. Yeah, I just said so sad because obviously he has those on up until he dies. And it's just an added little layer of ridiculous sadness there.
They're even slightly in the sound design in one of his last shots as well, aren't they? Because, like, you know, obviously his hands are some of the only parts of his body other than his head that are out of the water.
You hear them, like, jingling and hitting the way the sound of metal hitting the wood. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So, obviously, Rose looks panicked in this moment, too, and she's trying to get secure on this railing, and then we cut to a shot of Ruth watching the ship's last moments here, about to be the last moments before it splits, far away from the safety of her lifeboat. But she's in shock, and her eyes are almost glassed over.
It's a fantastic expression.
It is. Yeah. I love it. Mixed with the score, I love this part. It's like such a perfect lead up to the break.
And you immediately know what's going on in her head. You know, all the complexities of what's going on, even.
Yep, especially since she knows her daughter is still on there, most likely. You know, she doesn't know if she was able to get off on another lifeboat, maybe, or if she's still on there and is, you know, about to die. So she's looking at it like that. But she's also just kind of frozen, you know, like you can't compute the situation that's happening, especially, you know, you think back to, you know, the unsinkable ship, you know, and they were first class and she was so hoity-toity about everything up until literally boarding the lifeboats. And now in this moment, it's becoming real for her, I think.
And Molly Brown and Frederick Fleet are in the shot as well. They're obviously not the focus, but they're there because they were there in real life on the same lifeboat.
Yep.
Well, another, you know, great little shot of attention, of James Cameron's attention to detail.
I always actually liked Frederick Fleet's expression in the background as well.
He always felt a lot of responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So Molly Brown has that quote, "God Almighty," in this moment, which is very powerful, and I like it. However, my mom hates this line reading. She hates it. And she has to comment on it every single time we watch it. Like, even in the theater, she leans over and says, "I hate the way she says that." Like, every time. I'm just like, "Ma, like, what is the problem?" She thinks it seems maybe a little bit forced and unnatural and melodramatic, like a combination of all three, I don't know. But she has to point it out every time.
I think it might even be just Kathy Bates' accent in that.
I reckon she says exactly what, and the way she says it as well, I reckon it's exactly the way that a lot of the survivors would have felt in this moment. You do see their point of view of the ship in that great looking effect shot, you know, of the, I think it's a model shot, I think.
That's what I was going to say in my notes. I said, this shot is absolutely stunning, like stunningly tragic, but stunning. That, I think that looks so good.
It's a moment that, like, you know, artists like Ken Marshall and stuff have captured so many times as well, when the ship is at that particular angle.
I mean, this shot was absolutely inspired by his paintings, for sure.
Yeah.
Is that when they show the other angle from the
other side?
Yeah. I thought that was important, too, just kind of, like, giving the perspective of, I mean, it, you know, builds the verisimilitude of, like, it's not just a model from one angle, you know, that they just keep
the whole time,
going back
to,
yeah.
But. I think that's maybe another reason why this shot hits so hard too. Like, not only does it look great, but it's also like a refreshing perspective from what we've been seeing.
Yeah.
It does. It looks so good. It looks so sharp still, just everything. And again, we're hearing screams from even like further away now. I love that. And and you're hearing more crashing still. You're hearing that, but it's a little bit more faded. You see people jumping, like tiny little ants just jumping from this further distance. Yeah, it's such a good shot. Every time I've seen it on the big screen at this shot, I'm always like, I'm like Ruth in that moment. We are Ruth watching it from this distance now, and like seeing how incredible that looks, like how like incredibly unbelievable.
Ruth can't take her eyes off it.
Nope.
She's transfixed, and her expression. Yeah, I can't give her enough kudos for that.
Yeah.
She nailed it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So much mixed in there. So of course, after this stunning shot that nobody can take their eyes off of. Ismay does take his eyes off of it.
For good. The real yes. Ismay. The real, he never saw the ship go down.
Mm-hmm. Huh. He couldn't bring himself to look at it, yeah.
You see him turn away, and then he closes his eyes, and that's the end of the shot. Bruce Ismay did not look as the final moments of the ship. Yeah, he never saw it go. Never saw it disappear.
Wow.
Yeah, in the screenplay, it just says, Bruce Ismay, with his back to the ship, unable to watch the great steamer die. He is catatonic with remorse, his mind overloaded. He can avert his eyes, but he can't block out the sounds of dying people and machinery.
Mm-hmm. And his life was never the same after this as well. Like,
and I was saying, though, in my notes, I was like, you almost feel bad for him here. I would, you know, I mean, it's I don't know. As much as people try to say, you know, lots of people are one-dimensional or, you know, whatever. I mean, we've talked about it before, about Ismay, that, like, you know, if he was just a passenger on the ship and he wasn't the head of White Star Line, men were allowed on the boat that he got into, you know? So it's not totally wrong that he got on the boat, but it's because of his status and who he is, and it's a moral struggle there on his part. And so, yeah, I mean, at least showing him have what seems to be genuine remorse for this decision, or, you know, feeling partially responsible for the calamity happening behind him, you know, it is a little bit like, dang. You know, he's having this weight on him right now of like, man, if only I didn't urge them to go faster or whatever, you know, the movie wants us to think in that moment. You know?
But is it a cop out not to watch it fully True. Sink, you yeah. know?
Yeah. I mean, this is 1912 after all as well. And like the class, I mean, what is interesting in 2023 is just how, like, you know, the class thing is still a problem in this world. Like, yeah. You know, like, geez, we're really not progressing in so many ways, but not that we're here to talk about politics, of course, yeah. But
well, I'm a billionaire, so I can't really relate.
It's news to me, even.
But yeah, like, as in, it was such a big deal for such an important member of the White Star Line to save themselves. But it's also very realistic as well. I mean, because people don't know how they're going to react in crisis situations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The sinking of the Titanic showed that some people, you know, decided this was their duty and this was what they're going to do, and this, if they're going to go out, this is how they're going to go out. I mean,
It shows a whole spectrum, which I like, you know?
Yeah. Like, we don't even know if what they show in the film with Captain Smith is exactly what happened. And you guys spoke about that in that scene as well, about the way that there was, you know, there was some ambiguity, wasn't there, about, like, with the last time that he was seen. Mm-hmm. But for the movie, it's absolutely the correct decision to put him in the, you know, the wheelhouse.
Yeah.
And that shot is just so magnificent. How could you want to give away that, you know, and the imagery of that shot? Yeah, I think trying to analyze the movements of Bruce Ismay in this moment, and, you know, Is he inhumane, or, like, you know, is he a villain? You know, like,
yeah.
The movie's just, in this moment, it's just trying to be as accurate as possible, isn't it, Brittany? It's just trying to show this is what he did. Like, you know, this is what he did. You know, he tried to save himself. Was it the right move or not? Well.
And this shot is also pretty much lifted from A Night to Remember. It's like the same exact shot and portrayal of Ismay in this particular moment.
It's probably a homage.
Yeah, James Cameron, I think we've said before, he's been pretty open about, he was inspired to make Titanic because he watched A Night to Remember. But yeah, definitely a ton of homage throughout his movie here. So, but also, like, you know, people say, it's like, oh, he copied it. It's like, well, this is also what was said to have happened. So obviously there are going to be similarities. It is a historical event.
Yeah. And as we know, there was huge consequences to this decision. So you wouldn't exactly say that even though he got to live, he got to live a happy and fruitful life.
No.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Just random. I'll probably punch it in back to where we were. In the screenplay, it said there was supposed to be a point of view shot of one of the falling men. And then
oh, yikes.
The camera was supposed to like fall into the water. The water rushes up around the camera. That would have been so
that
not
would have been
good.
Awful. Yeah, yeah, that, yeah.
James Cameron would have said, like, you know, oh, if anyone can make this work, I can.
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. I was like, yeah. But
the reality of it, like, you know, oh, no. Nah, you can just visualize it. It just would have been so cheesy.
Yeah, the one shot no one needs more of is a POV shot. Definitely. Yeah. Unless you're Hitchcock. Like, there's not a lot of guys who can pull that off well.
No. You can also picture him, like, you know, he's like, okay, which camera guy is volunteering to jump?
Yeah, just throw your camera off the
yeah, putting the camera on a bungee cord and like sending it down, you know.
But knowing Cameron as well, he probably would have done it himself. Like, he probably would have taken the camera and just leapt off onto these mats or whatever. Like, yeah, yeah.
It can't just be the camera going down by itself. It has to be from the perspective of a man. Yeah. Someone has to be going down with it.
Yeah, if POV shots don't make you nauseous enough, that'll do it.
Yeah, it has to be shaky cam, you know? Yeah. But yeah, it said it was never shot though. So good. I guess that's a good thing. So that's the end of the scene.
Yeah. It's probably about 45 seconds to a minute in screen time.
Yeah, I know.
Something like that.
But we've been going for an hour 26.
Love it. Yep.
Par for the course for us, I guess.
Yeah, but that was so good. I greatly appreciate your comments and your insight. You were going off there sometimes. Like, oh, this is great.
Yeah, no, great stuff, man.
Hey, look, any excuse to talk about my favorite films, like, you know, it's, I just love doing it. You know, obviously I have a lot of friends who are also like heavily into film. And, like I said, it was movies like Titanic that got me into filmmaking and then podcasting, which is also about movies. And even though that show, Brittany, Real Chat, is no longer with us, it's not dead in the water, but it's been on a sabbatical for a while now. And yeah, I'm still in podcasting though. I'm doing one about the Aussie music scene at the moment as well. Oh, cool. So yeah, so I'm still doing my creative endeavors. But yeah, 100%, guys. Like, how many scenes have you got left? Roughly with the film. I mean, I obviously know what is left, but like, how many more episodes have you got roughly? Do you know?
Yeah, not because there's not many scenes left. But I mean, like, we're stretching this one out. We're making this a two-parter, so.
So you got the breakup coming up.
Yep. So I mean, it's technically this is two scenes, but also technically one. It's just Death of Titanic Part 1 and 2. 10 scenes left according to the Blu-ray. Scene selection.
Does that include the credits?
Does not.
Oh yeah, because there's quite a few minutes of credits.
Yeah, seven minutes of credits. Yes.
I'm suggesting that one of us just reads all the names for the entire episode. Yeah. We have some ideas though. In the pipeline. Yeah. We've like spitballed stuff, and we have one idea that for like another podcast, I think.
Because we just can't stop.
As in not Titanic related, is that what you
this is our second podcast actually.
Yeah, because we came from a childhood nostalgia based podcast, and we kind of wanted to like go back to that because we had a lot of fun with that, but then we've just taken a break from it for
So you're not going to do Titanic 2?
We've talked about that too.
I think I want to do that though, and that would probably
can you do a one episode?
Yeah. I think like
a one-off, yeah.
When we're done with it and like, you know, this is just a Titanic podcast in general, basically, after we're done pretty much.
Yeah.
And we can just do whatever we want for our last few episodes. I mean, I think there are some other cast members or crew members and stuff who have reached out to us that maybe want to come on. So I just really want us to finish the movie though. So I just want to get through these last few scenes. And then I feel like once we're done, we'll maybe do maybe a couple of interviews with them as like bonus content when we're done. And then I definitely think I want us to do Titanic 2. I want us to do like an audio commentary track for it. And then like an episode about it.
Yeah.
Because it's so funny. Like,
or just people, all of the Titanic related movies, I'd be down to something like that for.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because there was also like those spoof trailers for Titanic 2 Doesn't Exist, like where they use footage from other Leo DiCaprio films. And,
oh, yeah. Titanic 2 Jack's back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like frozen.
Yep. I love it. It's so funny, but people fall for that. Every like 5 years, someone like they'll redo the trailer. Like, I don't know if it's the same person, but they do like a slightly updated version of the trailer every like 5 years, and it always goes viral. It always gets people. I'm like, how can you not tell that this is clearly footage from a bunch of different Leonardo DiCaprio movies?
This is happening. This is happening, guys.
Yeah. Like, literally, he's preserved in a perfect rectangular block of ice that they have to thaw. It's like, how would that happen?
But no one else as well from the Titanic sinking, by the way. Just Jack. No. Just Jack.
Yeah.
Anyway, so yeah, so this was a great time. And yeah, I mean, this was so great. Like I said, I so value everything you had to share, all your thoughts on it today. It was so great bouncing off of you. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons why I love having a third voice in the mix. Yeah, I mean, I if there's anything else you want to share or plug or say, I don't know.
No, not really. No, I mean, like, I just really, really appreciate the opportunity, guys. Obviously, Titanic is a big love of mine, and it's always been important, you know, to me. And to just to meet and interact with other people who share that passion is just like invaluable. This is why people find podcasts and why people listen to podcasts, you know? So, yeah, it's been an absolute joy, and I can't thank you both enough for the opportunity.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, man. Yeah, I appreciate it.
It was a blast. So thank you guys so much for listening. We really, really appreciate it. Please be sure to follow on all of the socials. Everything will be linked in the show notes. Follow me on Ethan. Follow me on Letterboxd, Ethan on Letterboxd, and Adam, you're on Letterboxd too, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Yes, yeah, so we'll put of your links that you want us to include. We'll put those in the show notes. What else? Send us an email, titanicscenebyscene@gmail.com. Be sure to leave us a voicemail if you want via the link at the very bottom of the description. And I think there's like a 1 minute cap on those as well. I didn't realize that. So if you want to organize your thoughts and then say them over the course of 60 seconds, we would greatly appreciate that. Or I had recently thought of the idea, you know, if any of you guys have more lengthy thoughts you'd like to share on a specific scene, if you want to record like a voice memo about it or something and you want to email it to us, and we can air it on the episode and maybe reference it throughout the episode, and it'll be like, you know, you're a little mini guest spot on the podcast or something, that could be cool. And that's pretty much it, and we will see you in part two of Death of Titanic, which will be the next episode. So thanks,
see ya.